Well, it's been a year since swine flu, H1N1 flu, became a part of our consciousness, a year of sickness, fear, arguments, frustration, and yes, death. Dr. Cynthia Morrow, Commissioner of Health for Onondaga County, joins us this morning. Dr. Morrow, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
You know, you were here a year ago when swine flu, H1N1, I get corrected all the time, was just being talked about, that fear, that sense of fear as it started traveling across the border from Mexico. And now you're here a year later. We've all survived this year, but not everybody did. It's been quite a year, hasn't it?
It has been. It's been a remarkable year in so many ways. We've learned so much, not only about 2009 H1N1, which is the official
yes,
name,
of course.
But also about just public response to a perceived crisis and how we can respond, what we can do as a community to address such concerns.
You know, it has been an interesting year, and I even look at it from some of the bigger pictures. I think even the World Health Organization and the CDC from the United States government, All these organizations have learned a lot as well, haven't they?
Absolutely, and we should. We should use these opportunities, these experiences, to learn and improve our systems.
We should. Now, I think back, and a year ago, in April and then into May, we started hearing about some people here in Onondaga County getting sick, but not too many. And then we got into the good weather, and again, there weren't too many, were there?
Well, it's interesting. If we look back at our what we call our epicurves, we peaked for regular flu season in the third week of March of 2009, and then no flu activity, and then suddenly in May, we started seeing more and more flu activity. And actually, if you look at our June peak, it paralleled our March peak. So there was as much H1N1 activity in June as we'd seen at the peak of our activity in March.
The seasonal flu.
Right.
Yeah, interesting.
It's not quite as high, but significant. And then there was very little activity in the summer, but the activity started big time in the fall, and we peaked our last week of October with a very high level of influenza activity.
And, you know, I remember, and there are many young parents with young children in our neighborhood, and many of them were just really frightened for their children, weren't they? Why their children? That was another interesting part about
H1N1.
Well,
the biggest, you know, I do hear people say to me, you guys made a big deal out of this, and I disagree. I disagree strongly. And the reason I disagree is because this influenza virus, unlike our seasonal influenza virus, really impacted on our young, healthy children and young adults. It was a very different population that was significantly affected by influenza. In any given year, 70 to 80 children die of influenza.
Across
the country, yes. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, not very many children die of influenza. We do have a vaccine. Mm-hmm. But more than 300 children died. And for those
from
H1N1, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And for those families, it was devastating.
Absolutely.
It clearly was a different flu.
Yes, it was. And, you know, you said that we made a big deal and people are upset about that. I kind of look at it as the Chicken Little argument. You know, the sky is falling, and that was what we were afraid of. But in many ways, I think had we not taken the steps we had taken, the sky would have fallen. So, for instance, I remember that we went through a lot of educational kinds of things. Washing your hands, you know, singing the ABC song and washing your hands that long for young children, or making sure that they used hand sanitizer where they really had never been in that habit before. Coughing into your elbow. Some of those things that we learned to do that were really very different or were expanded from when we were younger. I think those are skills that we can all use anyway.
Every day, absolutely. They're skills that decrease communicable diseases regardless. And I do think that it's important to remember that a year ago, we didn't know what we were dealing with.
Yes.
Now we do in retrospect, but we didn't at the time. And we had to do whatever we could to protect our community. And I think that we did do a good job at that. The other thing that I think people don't realize is how many people were hospitalized, how many young, healthy people were hospitalized, and we're lucky that they didn't die. Years ago, with a different medical system, they may have.
True.
So there's so many factors, and that's what makes it a little bit complicated. But fortunately, a year later, we know we had a new virus. It affected a different population than the typical virus, and we learned as a community that we can respond.
You know, there are some big picture learnings here as well. I know one of the big complaints, problems, hurdles was that we weren't able to ramp up fast enough to produce enough vaccine early on to save a lot of the lives that were lost early on. Do you feel, are you comfortable that even the government and the pharmaceutical companies that were making these vaccines, have they learned enough to be able to ramp up more quickly the next time around? Because there will be a next time around.
There will be. Hopefully our technology will have changed and we will be able to do things more quickly. My opinion of the greatest mistake that was made in the last year was that we had unrealistic expectations of when the vaccine was going to be available. And I do think that the communication about that was very poor.
So you think it was more about the communication than
Absolutely.
The actual creation of the vaccine?
There are always problems with vaccine development. It depends on the virus. It depends on how the cultures are growing. And for the government to say, we're going to have this by this time was not a realistic expectation. And so people were disappointed and frustrated and angry because they had an expectation that wasn't met. If we had had a different conversation of, we don't know exactly when this vaccine is going to be available, mm-hmm. I think it would have mitigated some of that anger and frustration.
Or even if they'd said it's not going to be available till January and then
right.
made some of it available in October, everybody
exactly.
would have been thrilled.
Exactly. And so I think it's really about making sure that you're balancing the communication, being honest, transparent, and also realistic with the expectations.
Very quickly, we've also heard, I just read that there's been a somewhat resurgence in the southeastern part of the United States. Is this a third wave? We've heard them talk about the third wave. What do you think?
I do think so, and I think that we expected this. I'm very thankful that in central New York, we have not experienced this to any significant degree. But yes, the bottom line message is, as long as there's H1N1 circulating anywhere in the world, people who have not been vaccinated or who have not had disease are at risk. And so certainly talk to your healthcare provider. There's still vaccine, and it will be part of the 2010-11 seasonal flu shot.
Ah, very good. I didn't know that. Well, Dr. Cynthia Morrow, thanks for coming by. Our year in retrospective of swine flu.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm psychologist Dr. Rich O'Neill with this week's Checkup from the Neck Up. Well, dear listeners, 20 Julys ago, my wife Pammy and I visited my brother Charlie somewhere way back in Alaska. Picture this. To cross the last obstacle to his cabin, we sat on a swaying wooden platform, hanging on pulleys, squealing along a rusty cable 10 feet over a river, roaring off a glacier 300 yards to our left. Charlie warned, "The bone-gray water is so cold, if we fall in a couple minutes, the grizzled local year-rounders could use us to keep their moose meat coolers cool." So one muscles up on this platform and pulls hand over hand on the cable. First time over, Charlie ferries Pammy. Later that day, Pammy and I are coming back, and I'm ferrying. Pull, pull. Halfway over, my arms are throbbing. I said, "Stop." I say to Pammy, "Check out that view to the left. That glacier is amazing, isn't it?" Pammy laughs with gusto. I say, "What?" She says, "Charlie stopped in this exact spot and said, 'Check out that view. Isn't that glacier amazing?'" Apparently, she, who was not pulling at all, I might add, thought this sudden interest in scenery was some kind of primal preserving our manliness patter. Anyway, turns out that concentrating on the view, the sounds, the nose, the taste, if it's an edible moment, and sheer feel of the here and now is what Dr. Neckup and those of my ilk now refer to as mindfulness, a practice lauded for reducing stress whenever the pulling gets a bit too much in this going from here to there we call life. So, dear listeners, if you want to launch yourself to less stress when things get rough, pay attention to something appealing right next to you and roll it around in your mind like a pebble, rolling and bumping in the ancient flow of the pounding river until it tumbles you smooth. I'm Dr. Rich O'Neill. Thanks for listening.